Batman.
I am the knight. I am Batman.
I am Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman. I'm Batman. I'm Batman. I'm Batman.
Welcome to episode 211. I am Justin Shanlon, and we have Kyle Davis.
That's me.
And Drew Keese is joining us today on the podcast.
Hello.
So today's episode is going to be a little bit different. Actually, we're going to be talking about like Superman and Nicholas Hoult going on the Inside of You podcast that is hosted by Michael Rosenbaum, probably the greatest Lex Luthor. But then out of nowhere, Zack Snyder went on the Joe Rogan podcast and had some interesting takes. And so today we'll be talking about that. But before we get to talking about that, our last episode that we recorded, we talked pretty at length in regards to James Gunn's reveal of the new Superman suit. And you heard all of our hot takes on what we thought of the new Superman suit. Well, like, I guess not the Superman suit itself, but the Superman emblem, like the logo, like the chess piece on David Corin's sweat. But we have not heard from Drew on his thoughts. So, Drew, please let us know what you think of the... it's just weird. Like, why not just show the whole thing that day? It just...
Well, absolutely. I mean, I would have preferred to see the whole suit too. I mean, it would have been amazing just to have the whole thing, him stand there in the cape and all that. But for the emblem, if you would have told me a couple weeks ago that it wasn't going to be the classic S, I probably would have not been too happy about that. But kind of taking that Kingdom Come look, morphing it with kind of, I guess, kind of like the Max Fleischer looking color scheme, and with the yellow back, the yellow border around the S, I think it looks great. I think it looks very unique. You're not going to see that and mistake it for Superman Returns or any of the Christopher Reeve Superman movies or for the TV shows or anything like that. You're going to see that logo and you're going to know exactly which Superman we're talking about, we're dealing with. So you can slap that just on a poster by itself. It tells you exactly everything you need to know. Plus, I'm a big fan of Kingdom Come. I think that's a great story. So if we're getting any inspiration from that at all, even if it's just the logo, I'm here for it. James Gunn's obviously read the right books and read multiple of the right books, which is something that'll come up again later in this conversation.
You're saying he's read books other than Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns?
Yeah, it helps to have a lot of influences, and you can see that just in that logo where he's coming from several different angles, because we know the Grant Morrison Superman stuff is big in his inspiration. He posted about being inspired by Superman the animated series, and then obviously Kingdom Come. So all of that is all great to me. And I think just from that logo reveal, just continues to tell me that as far as just a Superman movie goes, James Gunn's the right guy to go in this. Jury stood out for me personally on whether or not the universe is going to work or not. We'll see. But as for this one Superman movie, I'm excited for that. And can't wait to see more as he reveals it. So I'm in.
Kyle, there was someone posted on, I think it was his Threads. I didn't even know if Threads was still a thing, to be honest. Asking about the yellow emblem on the back of the cape. Is that something that you want to see again? going forward, because we haven't had that since Donner Superman. Like in Superman Returns, it was just Red Cape. I don't think it was in Smallville. I haven't seen Superman Lois, so I couldn't tell you if that yellow logo was on the back of his cape. It definitely wasn't part of his cape in Man of Steel or BVS.
Right.
So is that something that you'd like to see? Because he alluded that he's going to include it.
Truth be told, I'm not a huge fan of having like a logo or crest on the cape. I prefer just having a nice red cape with nothing else on it. Because once you start adding like a second emblem on his character and his person, it starts to feel a little cluttered, a little over-designed. I think just having one on the chest is more than enough, personally. But, you know, I guess we'll see if he has something cooking.
Drew, thoughts?
I'd be for it. I mean, I like the classic look. Most of my favorite Superman stories have that in there. I could take it or leave it, but I'd be happier to see it there than not.
I do, like I said last week, I wish we'd still get the Eradicator look. So I'm a huge Eradicator fan. So I just think if you're trying to make Superman return or give a different look to it, I mean, obviously what he's doing is, it's fresh and new, but it's kind of like in the same milieu of what we've already seen. But, you know, him going full-blown Eradicator, I mean, even like he doesn't even need to include the sunglasses. But I personally, one of my favorite cinematic, you know, scene, one of my favorite scenes in any film is when he is overlooking Lois as she had just died, and you hear that music and you just see him kind of like slouched over a little bit looking at her. And you see, you know, it's from like the back, and you see that red cape with the yellow emblem on it. I think that's something that's been missing. But if he includes it, doesn't include it, I'm still looking forward to seeing this film. I think, you know, getting some of the set pictures from Norway as, you know, going to be the Fortress of Solitude. I don't know. There's just something. There's like I said last week, there's like a buzz. There's like this aura that's surrounding the Superman film. So the more that we get to see, when we finally get our first teaser, our first full-blown trailer, I think that many fans are kind of on the fence with this reinterpretation, this rebooted DCU. I think they'll kind of like, all right, like I'm in. So those are just, I don't think there was anything else that kind of popped up.
You know, Justin, you keep referring to the buzz around on the movie, but do you want to know what that actually is?
That's hope. Sure. What is that?
It's hope. It was right there on the crest the whole time.
Well, with that being said, let's get to
now. Let's crush all that hope with something else.
All right, so an interesting week, and like I said, I'm when I saw that Zack Snyder was on Joe Rogan, I was like, is he promoting something? Rebel Moon Part 2 isn't supposed to be out till like the summertime, right?
I have no idea.
I haven't seen Rebel Moon 1, so I've heard it's not good. Kyle, did you see it?
Nah.
Have you seen it?
No, I've not seen it.
I think that's the only Zack Snyder movie I have not seen.
So, well, I mean, Rebel Moon, for what it's worth, Rebel Moon Part 2 comes out April 19th.
Oh, that's pretty close then.
It's interesting. So I guess he could be promoting that film, but kind of doing it early. I mean, we're still a month and a half away from that.
Maybe Joe Rogan had all his time slots filled, and it's like, this is the only one I got for the next 3 months. You want it?
Well, I mean, we've only had like a teaser trailer for Rebel Moon Part 2, right? I don't think there's been a full-blown trailer for it. I don't know.
Well, I've not been looking for any Rebel Moon stuff, so I couldn't tell you really.
Yeah.
So the topic gets on to the notion of Batman and killing. And before we get into the comments or the quotes from Zach as he was talking on the Joe Rogan podcast, I think we as podcasters ourselves need to, you know, talk about, you know, Batman's rule of killing. And it was something that was brought up in Peacemaker, as Peacemaker was talking to that old dude about how, you know, Batman actually killed and stopped locking the criminals, the insane, up in Arkham Asylum, all the problems in Gotham City would essentially go away. But the idea of Batman killing has kind of come up time and time again. Like Batman killed in, the first Tim Burton Batman movie. Batman killed in Batman Returns. He literally blew a dude up, put some dynamite into his belt, and blew a dude up. He inadvertently killed Two-Face in Batman Forever. Batman killed A Good Time with Batman and Robin. And then I'm trying to think of Batman didn't save Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins. Some people say that he killed. We get to BBS. Batman is actually like branding his I wouldn't say victims, but the criminals that he's trying to, you know, handle in Gotham City. So the idea of Batman killing has one of those things that have kind of come and gone, you know,
it's quite prevalent in the live action Batman, surprisingly, even though it's kind of like a staple of most of the comics and the animated series that he doesn't do that.
And like, that's his rule, right? Like that was like the big thread in The Dark Knight, where Joker's like baiting him to kill him to show that he is, you know, not some moral authority in the city of Gotham. So, and it's kind of interesting to think about this idea. Like in, you know, The Dark Knight Returns, as everyone's kind of been referencing that like the last 10, 15 years, or since it's kind of come out, the idea of Batman killing, the Batman finally kind of putting an end to the rampant violence, you know, time and time again from Harvey Dent, the Joker, Scarecrow. I mean, the list goes on and on. I myself, as a fan of Batman, have never been one that liked the idea of Batman killing. He sees the murder of his parents at a young age, and he goes and becomes the world's greatest detective, one of the greatest crime fighters, one of the, you know, he's a martial artist. He trained, you know, to, you know, fight criminals. If he did not go, you know, shape his mind and body, you know, for almost a decade overseas, you know, there would be no reason for him to do that if he just decided that, oh, I'm just going to kill these criminals. The idea of him just going out and start blasting like Danny DeVito or, you know, whoever, it kind of takes away the aura of Batman, you know, Batman breaking his one rule. I'm not a fan of Batman killing. I'm a fan. I thought what they did in Batman Begins kind of encapsulated like my response at the end of the film. Like, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. You know, if you put yourself in this scenario, if you allow yourself to be consumed with hurting others, you know, Batman, you know, doesn't have to, you know, you know, do the Spider-Man thing of trying to save the you know, the Carter people and his girlfriend at the same time, right? Like, that's Spider-Man. But, it, like, and I don't even know if it's a Batman thing, because I feel like in Batman the Animated Series and other Batman iterations in the comic books, he's been able to do both. He's been able to save, you know, the Carter people and his girlfriend at the same time. Oh. But at the same time, at the same token, the idea of him saying, you know, like, I'm not going to kill you, but that does not mean I have to sacrifice myself or others by keeping you alive. I'm not going to put my hands on you that way. I'm not going to murder you in some horrific way, in some horrific fashion. But the same token, just allowing kind of like fate, you know, or karma, so to speak, in regards to the, to those things. You know, I don't know, like, I think that the way that Christopher Nolan handled that in those series of films, and obviously there were some unintended casualties, you know, at the hands of Batman in that film or in those films. But I know, you know, like, the, I just think that's kind of like the right approach to it going forward into, you know, this, you know, the 21st century, so to speak. I mean, the first iteration of the character literally was running around with his cape and cowl on with a gun. So, and like, obviously he doesn't do that anymore. Like, the character has progressed in a way where he doesn't, obviously, like, he went and trained to become, you know, a ninja. So I don't know. Like, my thought process is Batman doesn't kill. Like, he's not going to, you know, use a machine gun on criminals. He's not going to snap the Joker's neck. You know, he's not, you know, a la Man of Steel or Superman's, you know, snap Zod's neck. You know, like, there's that, to me, that's just where it is for the character. I'm curious Drew's thoughts. I'm curious Kyle's thoughts on the idea of Batman killing. Should Batman kill? Should he not kill? You know, like, the idea of all the plague of violence that's on Gotham City would probably be eradicated if Batman stopped allowing those criminals to, you know, break out of Arkham, you know, and then, you know, continue on their killing spree. So I'm going to start with Drew. In your opinion, I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say, and I don't know if it'll deviate much from my point of view, but I'm just curious, you know, doing this round table on whether or not Batman should quote unquote kill, what your thoughts are.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, I think it needs to be said that, yeah, Batman has killed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind when talking about, like, this comic book character who's changed over the course of 80 plus years. That, you know, things have changed, but there have even been some more quote unquote modern books, like something like Year Two, that has kind of addressed some of those issues. But I always think, because, well, we're talking about the issue of, like, oh, he could just eradicate crime if just blast a Joker in the forehead, take out Two-Face, take out Riddler, which I think even Tom King did a book recently where he ended up hinting that Batman killed Riddler at the end, which, it's whatever. But
it's Tom King, I mean.
Right.
It literally is whatever.
But I always think too about, you know, some of my favorite Batman stories have always been something like Batman the Animated Series episode, It's Never Too Late, where you have the gangster that Batman is kind of working to rehabilitate, or the episode where he's working to rehabilitate Ventriloquist. You know, more recently, we just got Harley Quinn's now a member of the Bat family because he didn't kill her, and she's now a hero in canon. And so there's a part of me that likes the idea of Batman seeing the potential and these villains to not be villains anymore.
Mm-hmm. And
the moment he starts killing is the moment he's just like, these people are scum. That's all they're ever going to be, is scum. So they just have to be killed. And so I think he even holds out that hope for someone like Joker. And I think that was, even in The Killing Joke, that's how that book ends, with Batman saying, let me help you be better.
Mm-hmm. Even though kind of like Grant Morrison recently said, you know, that book ends with, you know, Batman killing the Joker, right? Like he alluded to that.
Yeah, but Alan Moore didn't say that.
Right.
And Batman's literally offering Joker assistance and saying, I want to help you. And I have problems with that book, but that's not one of them. I think that's the most Batman Joker interaction of Joker saying, I can't trust you enough to help me. And so Batman would stop being Batman then, I think, the moment he would go out to intentionally kill villains.
Right. That's something that his inner monologue is always, you know, questioning. Like, I feel like even Alfred questions him. I think Alfred is his moral compass.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so to speak, like, it's this, you know, great. I never look at Alfred as, like, Bruce's father. I always look at Alfred as, like, Bruce's grandfather. That's how I always saw that relationship. You know, it's different. It's a different thing because that isn't his father. That is, like, whenever I read him, Alfred in the comics, whenever I see him in the animated series or, you know, in movies, I always look at Alfred as the moral figure in his life, but he's not his father. And so, like, I always feel like Bruce is constantly questioning, should I just kill? Like, the Joker, I killed the Joker, I'd probably save thousands of lives. If I kill Two-Face, I probably save hundreds of lives. You know, Ra's al Ghul. Ra's al Ghul wants to, you know, destroy the world. If I kill Ra's al Ghul, I probably save millions or billions of lives, right? It's kind of like this ongoing argument that Bruce is having within himself, right? And he always kind of puts – he always – like, in my interpretation of the character, his toes are always at the line, but he never steps over that line, in my opinion. But you are right, Drew. He has killed. There's been many instances in comics and in live action, you know, right? Like, I'm not losing my brain over on this one, right? Like, there's been times in different comics.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's never, I mean, movies aside, movies are movies, and I think, you know, it's something that I can kind of compartmentalize personally and say, well, that's the movie, particularly when it comes to like the Burton stuff, because that was of an era, that I think, you know, he was trying to be more 80s action star than modern superhero movie, mm-hmm. But. Yeah, I mean, in the comics, of course, Batman is killed. Batman has had to deal with himself being responsible for the death of others. I mean, you can make the argument that Batman was responsible for the death of Jason Todd. How does he deal with that? You know, he's been responsible for that sort of thing. But it's never been murder, and it's never been what we're about to talk about. And I mean, I don't know if we want to get into Dark Knight Returns now or not, but it's never been into the situation, even in the Dark Knight Returns, which needs to also be stated, that book's not canon. So let's stop defining what Batman should or shouldn't do based on what Frank Miller wrote.
But right. That's what's always been interesting about that book. And people, you know, like filmmakers and critics and, you know, let's say the general audiences, but I'd say like the more, you know, hardcore Batman fans look to that book as, if you didn't like Batman 66, where Batman was basically ballless, and I know Drew's a big fan of the 66 television series. I know a ton of people, you know, from that era that, you know, our parents, grandparents watched that show. But, like, it kind of was like, hey, you know, I literally have the book right on my desk right now because I was thumbing through it. It's been a minute. But that's the book where people, like, hey, here's your way into Batman for this new modern, you know, It peels back all the buffoonery of the POW, you know, Zap and Kapow and all that stuff from the 60 television series and gave Batman an edge again, kind of taking it back to 39, but then making him the Clint Eastwood, so to speak, Dirty Harry, so to speak. So, but yeah, we can talk about Dark Knight Returns right now if you want to, because that could lead into it. But before we do that, I am curious what Kyle's thoughts are, and I'm not trying to cut anyone off. So if you want to just continue on, Drew,
Absolutely. Because once we get into Dark Knight Returns, I think that could go a different direction too. So, hearing what Kyle has to say about that first topic.
Yeah. So my opinion, it doesn't differ too greatly from you guys. I'm definitely in the camp that Batman shouldn't kill. I know he, like we discussed, he has killed before. So individual opinions on the media where he does do that could differ, but it all goes back to, you know, what spawned the creation of Batman in the first place. That was death of his parents. And so I've always held this belief that if Batman were to resort to going as far as killing other criminals, then he's not really any better than Joe Chill, right? That's like a line that he needs to resist going across. He can be the better man. He can find a way to improve Gotham without doing what Joe Chill does, essentially. So there's the struggle in having to find his way of accomplishing that goal that I do admire.
And the philanthropy of Bruce Wayne, too, is something to discuss as well. You know, whether it's the Wayne Foundation or other things he does for the city. You know, because Alfred, you know, in The Dark Knight Rises and in other comics, Alfred is begging Bruce to, you know, obviously Alfred has always had an issue with Bruce putting on the cape and the cowl, obviously, because, you know, he sees that as his son, grandson, so to speak. And he feels for, you know, this person that's, you know, just so pained by the tragedy, where Alfred is like, you know, the city doesn't need your body. This, you know, you don't have to sacrifice yourself in the name of being a symbol. Like, you can be a symbol in other ways. Like, you're, you know, independently wealthy. You have all this money. You have all this vast wealth and resources. You know, you can, you're a scientist. You're highly, you know, intuitive and intelligent. You can, you know, come up with these different programs and different things for the environment, for, you know, the city, you know, for the betterment of the world and humankind. But the Lone Ranger aspect of it, the singular hero of avenging his parents' death. And, you know, like, I know we kind of joke about, you know, how awful the Flash is, but there's a scene in there where, you know, the Michael Keaton version of Bruce Wayne is talking about, you know, how he spent his life trying to, you know, deal with the tragedy. And I feel like in that scene, Bruce is talking about, like, you know, how, you know, the Ben Affleck, you know, the Batfleck in there is too, is, you know, talking about the scars that kind of define us. But I feel like listening to Bruce kind of like talk about, you know, the losses of his family and the, you know, the time that he spent in the cowl, you know, trying to avenge, there's this part of him that kind of wishes that he could muster up a way to ask the Flash to go back in time to, so he can be in another universe to, you know, be with his family. And, but there's also, I feel like a part of Bruce too is, let's say, happy that his parents were murdered, but he has purpose, right? Like, that purpose of, what would I do you know, if I wasn't doing this, would I just be, you know, a trust fund baby? Like, he has purpose now. He's out, you know, stopping, you know, petty theft. He's out there, stopping people from being mugged and robbed. And, you know, it's just interesting. It's such an interesting dynamic. And that's why I feel like Batman is one of the greatest heroes to ever, you know, be written in modern mythology, because Batman is a myth. These characters, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, are our myths, you know, our legends, you know, like they are Beowulf, they are, you know, Zeus and, you know, Hercules and Ares, you know, that they're our modern myths. And like, it's such an interesting dynamic. Here's this character that watches, you know, his parents murder, they're being murdered. And like, one of the most poignant scenes, and what's interesting in The Dark Knight Returns and what's interesting in Batman Begins is the idea of a gun. The idea of Bruce having this gun, he wants to kill Joe Chill. And then when he's unsuccessful, he realizes that he almost became the very thing that he hated. And then in The Dark Knight Returns, there's like that famous line, and like, Drew, you're going to have to, I don't remember what it is, but it's, you know, guns are, you know, I can't remember exactly what he says, so please save this sentence for me.
He said, they're loud and clumsy.
Yeah, like, it's just kind of like.
Weapons of the enemy.
They're weapons of the enemy. It's just interesting. Like, that's what is so interesting about this character. He could literally just wear, he just literally become a vigilante, just straight up vigilante, just wear a mask, become the Punisher, you know, step over the line. Because if you pass that line, you're now the Punisher. You're now punishing, you know, citizens for their, you know. And that's what's interesting. That's why I feel like people are so enamored with this character and have been for 80 plus years, because they always ask themselves, what would I do if my parents, if I had these vast resources, if I, you know, trained myself, you know, if I went to some monastery over in, you know, Asia, you know, and I trained with these, you know, if I trained with Buddhist monks, if I, you know, I trained with, you know, the greatest martial artist, you know, to ever live, you know, if I, you know, went to Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, on, you know, my days off from Wayne, you know, Wayne Enterprises. This is interesting. So it sounds like across the board, we as fans of the character, we don't think that Batman should kill. But, and I guess my question is, where is the line for you? Because I said, you know, like, I think, you know, for me, one of the best interpretations of him, like, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. Right. Like, what are your thoughts on that, Kyle?
I think it comes down to, like, the way Batman like, kind of reacts to it. Like, I don't want to see him gleefully kill, right? Like, the way he was in the Tim Burton movies, he kind of gleefully kills people in that one. But, like, I want him to be, if he is going to resort to killing, make it something a bit more sorrowful, a little bit more mournful.
Is like, he killing if he doesn't save?
That's a tough one, because I'm kind of conflicted on that one. Like the way the whole Ra's al Ghul thing goes down in the Nolan movies, it's like, technically, yeah, you're technically not the one pulling the trigger, but you still have a means of preventing it. So doesn't that, I don't know, part of me still feels like that makes him accountable for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like, even then, it kind of comes down to, he's not like gleefully excited about it. He's not like, I got you, checkmate.
He's not Kevin McAllister.
No, like he you can tell he's kind of sad about this. Like, I didn't want it to come to this, but you kind of forced my hand. You kind of forced the situation. So I don't know. There's a line there, and it's treading it very
right. Finely. Like I said, like if he passes that line, he just is full on the Punisher. And like at the end of the Batman, one of my things is like it almost seems like he's gonna kill that person. He like does it. He takes, you know, a hit of that venom. I think that's what that was. And then literally they have to like, hey, whoa, chill out, dude. So same question to you, Drew. Where's the line? Is he breaking his vow by not saving, by allowing their own death? And what's interesting about Ra's al Ghul's death is Ra's al Ghul caused his own mortality, right? He was the one who put the plan in motion, and the plan didn't go according to plan. And because of that, he became a victim of it. So what are your thoughts, Drew?
Yeah, I mean, Batman Begins is an interesting example because he did save Ra's earlier on in that movie, and it bit him in the ass. And so, you know, you don't get two bites at this apple. I'm not going to save you twice. Kind of, at least this is how I always read that. Although there's a part of me that the Batman from Batman Animated Series would have gotten him out. Or to be fair, the Ra's in Batman Animated Series, even if he died, he would have been back the next episode because it's Ra's al Ghul.
Ra's even talks about having compassion. He goes, I warned you about having compassion.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so that to me, in that particular movie, it was about like, oh, this is, if I save him, he's going to come back. He's going to do this again. But then you go to The Dark Knight where Joker's falling off the building and Batman does save Joker.
Right.
But then 20 minutes later, he pushes Harvey off a building. So who knows?
I feel like it goes back to Harvey is a product of his own demise, right? He literally held a gun to a child's head.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I'm okay in that the particular scene in Dark Knight Returns where the thug is holding the gun to the baby's head and says, believe me, I'll do it. And Batman says, I will, and pulls the trigger. I don't particularly believe that Batman shot the guy. I don't think that's super clear. But I'm okay with either way because I think that kind of fits in character in some ways. I think the line does get crossed, say, and I hate to do it because I know it's easy to criticize Batman versus Superman, but I think the line does get crossed when he's got a machine gun on the front of the Batmobile or the Batwing, and he's shooting at things and blowing up individual thugs. I think that's well beyond the line where it's like, I'm doing this action that is going to cause the death of someone, and I don't care. I'm not going to do anything to stop that.
Right. Okay. To push back before we get into like the whole Zack Snyder talk. And I guess we're walking into this landmine. Because I feel like we're all fans of Zack, right? Like, I haven't. The only film Zack Snyder I've not seen is Rebel Moon, and the only reason I haven't seen it, truth be told, is because I'm just waiting for the second one to come out. To I'm gonna just why not just binge, those films back to back. Tim Burton literally strapped a bomb to like a huge dude's like belt, and smiled after he fell over and blew up.
It's kind of sadistic.
He literally blew up a bunch of people and Axis chemicals. He literally used a Batwing to kill like these people to stop them from poisoning the city. But then, you know what Drew said, him having, because he did it in the Batmobile chase and then the Batwing chase, he's literally using like a machine gun to kill these people. Why do we think? Why, like, it just seems like Tim Burton gets a pass, right? where Zach doesn't, if that makes sense.
I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but for me personally, I think it's because he gets a lot of other aspects of Batman's character down so well. Like he has that that like billionaire playboy type of vibe that Keaton does. He does the detective work pretty well.
But he does brand people though. I don't ever remember reading a comic
where. You see that's where the Snyder one differs. Where I feel like there are aspects of the Burton Batman where even though he is kind of like sadistically killing people, he does other Batman-y things so well that's like, okay, yeah, it's kind of balances out a little bit. Whereas the Snyder one, I don't think it's as balanced of a Batman. Like, yeah, he's killing people, but then when it comes to the more detective-y side of Batman, he's not really doing that too well. And he's not as personable. He's not as charismatic.
So before we get,
if I may, real quick, I think the other thing that hurt, that why Snyder doesn't get a pass there, and is because it comes up on the heels of the Nolan version, which nailed in most ways it nailed that aspect of Batman, and so the general public was much more aware of Batman's rule and his characteristic in 2016 than they were in 1989. And so it's a lot easier to say in retrospect, like, oh wow, Batman shouldn't be doing that. But I think for a lot of people, the 89 Batman was their introduction to a Batman that wasn't Adam West. But when we're like, oh, I just spent three movies with this Batman that I fell in love with, played by Christian Bale, who would never have done that, would never behave that way. And then I was willing to go along with Zach on the killing thing, with the promise of redemption, but I'm not convinced it ever came. But that's a discussion for another time.
Let me read you some quotes from when he was on the Joe Rogan podcast. He starts talking about how he is a fan of, he is a huge fan of these characters, and he goes, and I'm going to paraphrase some of this because I'm reading from Variety, because obviously we're not trying to get any strikes from anyone by playing the audio. So I'm just going to read you from Variety. Snyder said that he tends to get in trouble with comic book fans because I do take a deconstructivist point of view because I care. I want to take superheroes apart. People are like, Batman can't kill, so Batman can't kill his canon. And I'm like, okay, well, the first thing I want to do when you say that is I want to see what happens. Snyder continued, and they go, well, don't put him in a situation where he has to kill someone. I'm like, well, that's just like you're protecting your God in a weird way. You're making your God irrelevant. And then he goes on, Snyder found it much more interesting to put Batman in a situation where he has to kill, taking inspiration from Frank Miller's comic book, The Dark Knight Returns. He said fans often don't want to see their hero in a no-win situation because we don't want to see him lose, but that's not the story he wants to bring to the screen. Snyder isn't interested in a superhero who has to maintain this godlike status. He goes, we can talk about this other point. He goes, I remember the ratings board said we just don't like the idea of Batman fighting Superman. I was like, that has nothing to do with the ratings. They kept making it an R rating. They kept coming back with us with an R for us. What do you want us to cut? And they were like, well, we just don't like the idea of Batman fighting Superman. And I can't take that out. That's the movie. So let's take a look at his quote, his first one, where he basically saying like, well, because you're telling me I can't have, Batman kill, the first thing I want to do is see Batman kill. And it's such a weird.
Yeah. So like the vibe I'm getting from this is he's trying to say that this is all under the pretense of deconstructing the character. And that is a concept I can get behind, but the way he makes it sound, it's more like he's purposely trying to be antagonistic to fans.
Maybe.
Like, oh, you don't like the thing? Well, then I'm going to do the thing. It's like, okay. And then he gets upset when people don't like it. You know, it's just like, well, you kind of brought it upon yourself.
Drew?
I have so many scattered thoughts on that particular section. First off, I don't appreciate the idea that he seems to be suggesting that he's the first to deconstruct Batman. Nolan did it just a few years before he did, and did it better.
How so?
Well, he did it in the writing room. He didn't break Batman. Here's what's essentially Batman, the essential elements of who Batman is, and stripped it down, and then rebuilt it into what would look like in the real world. Mm-hmm. Whereas Zack Snyder's version of what deconstruction is what's something that he wouldn't do, and let's make him do that, which that's not deconstruction, that's just breaking. So that's my first issue with that. My second issue is I don't think anyone has really complained about any moment in Batman vs Superman where Batman was put in a no-win situation. There's only one scene. It was the Martha scene where with the gun and the flamethrower,
and that was kind of troped. That was like almost a beat by beat the same thing from The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah. That's never, as far as I'm aware, that's never been the kill that people have complained about in that movie. It's all the other ones where it's like, oh, there's a guy in the car. Let me shoot the car and blow it up.
Do you think that he gets the flack from this? Because in the movie prior to BVS, Superman literally does the most horrific thing to another, you know, and obviously like a Kryptonian, but literally snaps a Kryptonian's neck and didn't do it like off scene. Literally showed Superman, who's supposed to be better than us. Do you think that's where it comes from? That's where the controversy comes from? And like, and then it just kind of continued on in Batman versus Superman.
It didn't help.
But like, let's look at it, because Batman has killed before. Tim Burton did it. Nolan did it like inadvertently. Joel Schumacher did. Literally threw up all the coins at the end of Batman Forever. But it just seems like Zach gets this unfair, and I'm just trying to dissect why is that? Is it because at the end of Man of Steel, the beginning of the universe, Superman does something that Superman really wouldn't do? Yeah, Superman's killed before, right? Like, we all know this. There's been hundreds of times, but the way that he does it, the way that he kills, it's not like, oh, you know, like, and the way that he does it too, like, obviously he Superman's trying to figure out a way to save everyone, like the entire planet, because Zod has made it very clear that Superman, that he is going to do anything and everything to destroy this new world that he is now, that Superman, that Kal-El is now in love with.
Well, let's look at that, because if that's, because he didn't talk about deconstructing Superman, because I mean, I don't know if he was ever really too interested in deconstructing Superman all that much.
I don't think Zack Snyder was ever too interested in Superman, to be honest.
Probably not, but he never, the issue I have with that, again, is not necessarily the action that it took, is that it was never properly addressed. It was never rebuilt. It was not deconstruction. It was let's tear it down, and we're just going to leave the pieces sitting all there.
Yeah.
And it never really made any sense to me, because I mean, the promise was, oh, Batman versus Superman, he's going to have to deal with the consequences of that. It never got brought up.
Right.
It was like, man, I wish I hadn't done that.
Right. And like the consequences of the ending of Man of Steel, where, you know, like there was all that destruction at the end of Man of Steel. And then you saw like the consequences, you know, obviously that memorial thing. And then it just like you said, like he kind of breaks everything. And by the end of the film, you know, Humpty fell off the wall, but we never put Humpty back together again.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting to think about. Like, and I've never thought about, you know, like, yes, he says he's very deconstructionist. Look at Watchmen. Watchmen was way ahead of its time. Like, watching The Boys right now, if you watch The Boys, or what's the Amazon series, the animated series?
Invincible.
So, like, that's literally those things. Zach was kind of at the forefront of that. But it's just interesting. Like, he broke Humpty Dumpty. And then he's like, all right, I'm just going to leave these pieces here. And maybe we'll get back to putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. Maybe Humpty Dumpty will go back on that wall. But he kind of just leaves it in to their own devices. Like, I don't know.
He leaves it and then he gets a shiny new Batman toy. And he's like, I'm gonna play with my new toy.
Well, it's interesting though, right? Like it's just so parts of me too think that he says these things to get it. I hate to say it, but if I were him, I would have said, like, obviously, you know, Superman killed, Batman's killing, and where we were going to was by the third film and beyond, we were going to show these characters being like we just deconstructed. And I think he made this point somewhere else, but he goes, if he would have said like where we were and where I was taking these characters, they were going to be at their fully formed selves, where Batman wasn't killing, Superman was, you know, this beacon of hope for humanity. But it just never felt like, even watching Zack Snyder's Justice League, I never felt we got those, you know what I'm saying. We got like versions of our favorite heroes, but it was never the iconic take on those characters. Like, why has Superman the movie, you know, stayed the test of time? Because it celebrates who Superman is. Why is Batman Begins, The Dark Knight? Because it celebrates the character. It gets the character right. Captain America. You get Captain America, the first Avenger. Then by the, I don't know how many times Captain America was in the other Marvel movies, but when you get to Captain America, the Winter Soldier, that is when you kind of contort the character a little bit.
Right.
Bringing the character out of its comfort zone. Whereas Zach, unfortunately, had the unfair of, it was kind of unfairly thrust upon him. We need these characters to be where they're at. I don't know. Like, it's just interesting. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? Like, about the Humpty Dumpty thing? Like,
well,
like
I think I'm on, I don't have any issue with the individual decisions. I think the problem was, and part of it is because we never got to see the universe fulfilled. Another part of it is it, maybe it took too long to develop, but you're 100% right that they never achieved that iconic status three movies in. It shouldn't take three movies for Superman.
I felt like Wonder Woman was like, that first Wonder Woman film, I'm not even talking about Wonder Woman 84. I'm not going to talk about, you know, Wonder Woman and Zack Snyder's Justice League. I'm just talking about when we got Wonder Woman, when we got Shazam, Like, I always felt like those characters, like, they understood.
They had, like, an actual complete character arc in one movie. It didn't take an entire trilogy to have half an arc, you know?
Right. They understood, like, Patty Jenkins, and, like, this is more Jeff Johns. Like, Jeff Johns, I've heard from so many people that Jeff Johns was a secret sauce in Wonder Woman, the first one. Obviously, you could feel that. You could feel his fingerprints all over Shazam. And, like, he was trying to turn Superman into, like, that beacon of hope. We always heard that Jeff and Zach didn't really get along on set because Jeff is like, he's a little too dark. Like, this is kind of like, I understand what Zach was trying to do. He was trying to modernize Superman, but I don't feel like you need to do that. Like, after watching, you know, Captain America, it's okay to.
That's also weird because it's like in modernizing the character, he translates that into like, oh, you have to depict him as being not as nice of a guy as you might have thought, which is kind of weird. It's kind of like a weird nihilistic view. Like, actually, everything just sucks nowadays.
And we're not talking about, like, we're not saying, like, oh, Superman never smiles in Man of Steel. We're not talking about that. I'm not talking about that. I really do enjoy Man of Steel.
Yeah.
My big problem is the ending. Like, once you go from Smallville and then it goes into that, like, last 30 minutes where it just, I always felt like the problem, and Paul Dini brought this up on Fat Man and Batman years ago, where, you know, like, he never understood why we should care about Perry and Lombard and those other characters and those characters in Metropolis when all these other nameless characters are just being destroyed by this fight that should have taken place anywhere but Metropolis, right? Or if it did take place in Metropolis, Superman would have been more self-aware, I guess would be the right term, to be like, all right, like, obviously we're destroying the city, but I'm gonna punch Zod in the face, and then I'm gonna save some people. I'm gonna kick Zod, you know, in the left testicle, and then I'm gonna save some people.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, Superman should have been dragging Zod out of that city to try and reduce the number of casualties. But that's not really what happens.
Right. Drew, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to kick Man of Steel too hard. I mean, it's a movie that I do enjoy quite a bit. I have nitpicks on it, of course.
He always made weird choices.
Exactly, and
like not saving his dad.
And the problem comes down to when we go into Snyder's remarks they made this past week, it's as if he has heard all that criticism and has misunderstood all of it and has just been like, I just want to see people kill people on the screen, and I want to see R-rated, bloody, gory, mindless violence with characters you love. And that bothers me a lot because it does feel like, you know, especially for those of us who were on board 2013, 2017, and being like, hey, let's give this trilogy a chance. I'm excited for Batman vs. Superman. I'm excited for Man of Steel. I'm excited for Justice League. I'm excited for this DCEU. And I was one of them. I was banging the drum for all this stuff back then. Mm-hmm. To know that the things that we felt like we were promised of, like, he's not the Superman we love yet, but it's coming in Justice League. Or he's not the Batman we love yet, but it's coming in Justice League. To know that that may have never even been the intention, it's like, what were we wasting our time with here? Why were we doing this? What really was the goal here? Right. Was it just to say these characters aren't worth anything anymore? Because that's what it feels like. Snyder's saying you're making Batman irrelevant by not having him kill, and so that is the exact opposite of how I feel. I feel like the moment he kills, he's not relevant anymore because he's not Batman. He's somebody else.
But when he says that Batman's a god, I'm just like, no, he's a man. Superman's a god. Wonder Woman's a goddess.
So, and by not killing, that's what gives him his relevance. That's what makes him special.
Right. And
you can deconstruct that. You can examine that. You can make him have his doubts about that. But the moment you take a hammer to that, it's over.
Do you think that Zach hears the criticism, but he himself thinks that he knows the characters more than the what warrants the criticism? Like, and this is for both of you. You think that, I'm not trying to say that Zach maybe thinks he's smarter than everyone in the room in regards to these characters, because in reality, he does know these characters. He just makes these odd decisions. You know, a couple years ago when he was talking about like having Bruce knock up Lois Lane, and there's other weird things that he was saying about, like, if this was the continue on, and I was reading it and hearing about it, I was like, no, I don't want those things. That doesn't make sense to me.
It's strange because, like, what I think is happening is I think Zach is trying to creatively push the boundaries and venture into new territory, which is admirable. That's what every creative should be trying to do. But the way he goes about it, I do think, in a way, is pushing too hard in areas that maybe shouldn't be where you're looking for those new adventures or whatever. It's like, yeah, the whole Lois Lane thing, the whole, oh yeah, Batman's a killer. That's who he is. That's the spirit of this character. It's just you're getting to a point where you're potentially portraying too much of the character, and to the point where they're like unrecognizable.
I always felt like watching Zack Snyder's films, and like, again, like, I'm not trying to make this controversial for myself, but I think Drew and I talked about this, and I think Drew brought it up, and I'm just gonna, you know, take all of his ideas and say that they're mine. But Drew brought the idea, and I'm going to co-sign on this idea, that Zach probably only ever read Dark Knight Returns. Not to say that he never read other comics. Not to say that he didn't read Long Halloween. Not to say that he didn't read, you know, Year One, but it just always, everything goes back to Dark Knight Returns, Dark Knight Returns, Frank Miller, Dark Knight Returns. And I'm just like, there's Neil Adams and, you know, Denny O'Neill. There's, you know, the Aparo Batman. There's, you know, the Bruce Timm, Paul Dini Batman. There's the Scott Snyder stuff. Everything goes back to Frank Miller. And I just, when I hear him talk about these characters, he's like, I'm giving you the Superman from Frank Miller. I'm giving you the Batman from Frank Miller. And I'm just like, it's just odd to me. Like, I guess I'm saying he just never ventured out from, you know, the Dark Knight Returns. Does that make sense? I'm probably wrong. I feel like if anyone's read more comics in the world, probably Zack Snyder's read probably more comics than I have combined, and all of us combined. But does that make sense? It just feels like he's just kind of like, here's the version I want to make, and I don't want to deviate from, you know, because this is, when I read this in 1986 when it came out, like, I just was so fucking blown away. And even this is like, if I could make The Dark Knight Returns, I'd be done with comic book movies.
Well, that definitely was, I think, you know, I think that 86 was definitely his era. The Frank Miller stuff was definitely his era. I mean, look at the stuff he made. I mean, BVS was highly, like we said, based on Frank Miller. He made 300, which is a Frank Miller book. He made Watchmen, which was an Alan Moore book that came out in 86, the same year as Dark Knight Returns. Mm-hmm. And then he, you know, he produced the 300 sequel, another, you know, Frank Miller book. So that's certainly his world, his fandom. More power to him. I probably of this group, I might be the biggest Frank Miller fan. I really do love his books. But you're 100% right. There's so much else out there. And he does talk, when he mentions Frank Miller, there is a reverence in his voice when he does it. It's kind of like someone saying, what does the Apostle Paul have to say about this? It's how he talks about Frank Miller. And so he just has this high elevation of Frank, which I get. I can appreciate that. Going back to what we're saying about James Gunn at the beginning, it could have used a lot of infusion with other sources. For Superman, I wish he had. He made a book. He made a movie called Man of Steel. I wish it had more John Byrne. Mm-hmm. I wish it had more of Superman for All Seasons. It would have been nice. I wish it had more of the Superman birthright in it. But we got what we got, which is fine. I mean, I don't hate Man of Steel at all. But it is narrow, and I think it got significantly worse, I think, as the trilogy went along, even though I think his Justice League is probably the best of the three. But as far as like his breadth of source material, it got thinner and thinner as things went further.
Right. It just and like, not to say we're not here criticizing Zack Snyder, but he brought these things up about, you know, Batman killing, how Batman's kind of irrelevant if I can't allow him to kill. It's just like, why, you know, why does he need to seem to shake the hornet's nest? So it's all interesting. I don't know. Like, it's just weird. It's just kind of like, I fucking love Man of Steel. Again, I have problems. Right. The last 30 minutes is problematic for me. Killing Zod was very problematic for me. I was okay with it at the time, but, you know, looking back in history, where we're at today, I was like, probably shouldn't have done that. I think the first 30 minutes of Man of Steel might be some of the best first 30 minutes of any comic book film. There's so much to love about, you know, Krypton.
So great.
You know, like, it encapsulated everything that needed to be said about why Jor-El sent his, you know, only son to save the world. It's just like, when I was listening to that, I'm just like, he gets the characters, but he gets the characters from the viewpoint of Frank Miller.
Yeah.
You know, like, and there's like if I could make a Batman movie, I would make it like Batman the Animated Series. you know, and I would infuse elements from year one. I didn't
right. You'd have multiple influences, not just right. a singular source.
Like I'd have, you know, year one, I would have, you know, I'd have influences from, you know, Neil Adams. I'd have influences from, you know, 1939, you know, like everything just seems like, and he knows how to get people to talk about him. I guess that's what I was trying to say a few minutes ago. And he's very good at that. And he knows how to get other people to talk about him too, you know, with, you know, some of his friends. What else is there to say about this? Do we have any other thoughts on this? And it's interesting too that he's doing this. He's making these comments as James Gunn's film is now filming. So.
Yeah, I think that's probably my last thought. I'm glad you brought that back up because I was thinking about it earlier. Is that I kind of wish that, hey, you're making Rebel Moon. This is a creation. This is your own baby. Stop worrying about what someone else is doing with their baby and nurture yours, because you know you're not the DC guy anymore. And for better or worse, you're not the DC guy right now. So wish James Gunn well. Step aside gracefully. It'd be the professional thing for him to do. I want to, and it's hard enough as it is to log in to social media anymore. And every time there's anything posted about James Gunn's Superman or the DCU or Matt Reeves, the Batman or anything, is just covered in comments regarding Snyder stuff. It's hard enough doing that with his fans. We don't, it'd be nice if he didn't add to that flame too. Mm-hmm. And so I would just like a little bit of reprieve from all that. And I think it starts at the top. So that's my final thoughts on that.
Kyle.
Yeah, I know some people who have listened to the past like two or three episodes might think I'm just like a big Zack Snyder hater. That's not the case. I love the guy. I love a lot of his movies. I just think, like we were talking about, there are some questionable decisions he makes from time to time, but that doesn't ruin the products as a whole. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he conducts himself in a way in interviews that seems like he's just trying to rile up, you know, trying to shake the beehive a bit, and sometimes it works, like in cases like this where it's like, eh, it was a questionable thing you said, Zach. We'll talk about it, but you know, we don't approve of it necessarily. So right. Yeah, just throwing it out there, you know, still a fan of Zack Snyder, still a fan of his movies. I love Man of Steel, 300, that stuff.
Watchmen
is one of the all-time greats. I know some people have their qualms with it, but I think it's one of the best
comic movies of the book.
It does in some ways. I will agree that the ending of the book is probably better, but I think everything else about that film is just fantastic.
I hate the octopus at the end of the book, to be honest. I think how he handled it was way better. That's just my opinion.
Next week on Shannon Batman, Watchmen versus the book.
And honestly, I'm a huge Zack Snyder fan. Like I've been watching Zack Snyder stuff since he directed Michael Jordan commercials.
Yeah,
like he's been omnipresent for my entire life. And if there was ever an opportunity for James Gunn to say, "Hey, do you want to do The Dark Knight Returns?" I would be the first one in line, because I think that book.
So yeah, let Zach do his dream project.
That story is right up his alley. Like honestly, if they were going to make a Peacemaker movie, that would be Zack Snyder, written by James Gunn. Like there's other amazing projects that he can do in DC that does not have to revolve around Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman. I mean, shit, he could do Suicide Squad. He could do, you know, like, he could do, like, honestly, like, he's my number one choice to direct Lobo. You know, I'm a huge fan, but it just seems like, I know we're bringing this up and we're talking about it and he was just giving comments and everything and we're part of this problem too, but it just goes back to like the idea of Batman killing, and that what he said, I was just like, it like part of me is like, do you get the character? Like, because he makes that comment. He goes, literally, you know, Batman just shoots him in the head in the comic book. I was like, I don't remember Batman shooting anyone in the head in the comic book. It literally, I was looking at the page earlier. It just goes, like, that's it. Like, it does not say anything. There's no blood on, you know, Batman's suit right after. There's nothing. We don't know what happened. So, I mean, Batman tried to kill Superman, but Batman failed. Like, did Batman kill Harvey Dent? I don't think so. I don't even think he killed the mutants. The Joker killed himself. So
no, there's even when he's attacking the mutants, there's a whole thing of him in his monologue making a point of he's using rubber bullets.
Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, I know that he's trying to contort. I know he's trying to, you know, give these characters edges, but Superman doesn't need an edge. He just needs to be Superman. Batman doesn't need to kill. He just needs to be Batman. And like I said, like, I can't, like, I really do want him to direct The Dark Knight Returns. Like, I want someone to back up $150 million to make that thing happen in 15 years. But it just these comments, I'm just like, it's just odd. So any other thing that we need to talk about that we missed in regards to things that happened? Like, literally, I was hoping to just talk about, you know, the Nicholas Holt thing. I don't know. I'm guessing no one listened to the Inside of You, or Nicholas Holt was talking about how Michael Rosenbaum was like his first foray into Lex Luthor. That was his Lex Luthor growing up. So a lot of interesting things, talking about the audition process. So that'll be the next episode that we do. So any parting words or shots or anything? Again, a huge fan of Zack Snyder. Love him as a filmmaker. We'll listen to any interview he gave. He literally gave an interview yesterday talking about how 75% of the Blu-ray DVD sales of Batman versus Superman were from his, you know, director's cut, his ultimate edition. And he didn't get any money from that because it wasn't in his contract. So like I don't know. Kyle, Drew,
I think I've said my piece on the matter for now.
For now.
Who knows what he will say next week?
Yeah, and I just to echo again what you guys have said. I'm still a fan of the guy's movies. But at the same time, looking forward to James Gunn's Superman and continuing to be a fan of the characters and all their incarnations. So forward we move.
So with that being said, episode 211 is almost in the can, but make sure that you're doing all that you can to support this podcast. Want to say a huge thank you to those people who listened to our last episode. I literally looked at how many people were listening the last week and a half. Like, I was blown away forward. So huge thank you to those who listened to, you know, the last couple episodes. Kind of revitalized myself. I don't know. I can't say that. I'm sure Kyle's like, yeah, that's cool. I don't know if Kyle was like, yeah. Got Zack Snyder wanted to go to the gym and do some Jim Jones huge thank you to those who listened to our last episode. Really looking forward to all the cool things that are coming up. Like, I feel really revitalized with, you know, seeing that new Superman suit and getting the reaction that we got from our last episode. Looking forward to talking about Nicholas Holt next week, because now I'm kind of jazzed with what he had to say in regards to Superman and Lex Luthor. And like, that's my thing, is like you have this other person out there, you know, talking for the first time about this character. And we kind of like, we're talking about this other thing when we should be talking about that thing, because that's the future. But yeah, make sure that you're doing all that you can to support this podcast by going to our, I almost said YouTube channel. We don't have a YouTube channel. Going to our social media, Shailen on Bats. You can follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Batman Shailen. Kyle is on the Twitter machine, but he does not use the Twitter machine. And Drew will be back on the Twitter machine when the drafts happens. So with that, episode 211 is done. Peace.